Let's talk about teenagers and transitioning into the teen years. That's what this basically is, the transition years, both into young adulthood and into adulthood as your young men and young women leave home. It's two things, two burdens I want to lift from your shoulders as we start here. The first burden is to be able to do something with your children that will guarantee they walk with God, your young men, young women who are in your home. Both my parents were alcoholics. I came from an affluent home. They were both alcoholics, completely dysfunctional family. All three children, yeah, thank you. All three children in a full-time Christian service. I have a good friend. His dad was deacon in the church. Mom taught Sunday school. Very stable home, functioned with an extended family. Dad made sacrificial decisions in terms of his career to be involved with his kid. They did every single thing right. He's on his third marriage. The other son never goes to church, smokes dope, a professional photographer. You know, you just can't, sometimes there seems to be no rhyme or reason on what our kids do and other people's kids do they? And so what we have to do is figure out what God wants us to do and be true to God in our love and devotion to Him, and be true to our family in our love and devotion for our family. But I don't place on you the burden of being responsible for your children when they're adults making the right decision, and I don't hold you responsible when they make the wrong decision. I hope you'll not do that with me or with each other. If Harold here on the way home, he drives by a massage parlor and he decides, well, why not? So he pulls in and is unfaithful to his wife. Is that a reflection on his mom? Is that a reflection on his dad? No, that's a decision he made. And I would encourage you not to carry the weight, although we're heartbroken, when our teens and the young adults and adults who are our children but are no longer children are actually our sons and our daughters, when they sin, that hurts us. But you are no more personally responsible for that than my mom or dad would be if I chose to do that. Because they are young adults. And whether we like it or not, in our culture, when you're about 14 or 15, you are an adult in terms of the opportunities to function and sin and make moral decisions. And whether we like it or not, in fifth grade in the public school systems, you are being prepared for adulthood. And we have to stop relating to our children as children and begin relating to them as young adults at about the fifth grade, because society does. Whether we want it to happen or not, we can remove our children into the evangelical subculture through Christian schooling and homeschooling if we feel that's best for them, and that's an individual decision. But society will move on, and at some point they'll have to re-enter. But our public education system begins to prepare young men and women for adulthood in the fifth grade. In middle school or junior high, they're changing classes. There's no one adult that has authority over them. The school treats them as high risks for violent crimes, for sexually transmitted diseases, and for drug use starting the junior high years and into the high school years. So they are, in every sense of the world, young adults, and in every sense of the world, by 10th grade, adults in terms of functioning members of the society. Whether we feel they're ready for that or not, that's the society we live in now. And that's what is in terms of that. One thing I encourage men to do with teenagers or children who are entering the teen years is take a good look at the people you are modeling and how their relationship with their teens is going. One of the things Eleanor and I have always tried to do is find people who have a good relationship with their children and then ask them what they've done to maintain that. And that's, we've always done that. We've always people in our church, not necessarily in the Navigators, but they might be in our church, they might be in the community, they might not even be Christians. But if they have good relationship with their children, we try to pump them and find out what are the do's and don'ts for being like you. Now, I've got a friend who has a model. This guy is kind of his mentor. This mentor of my friend looks about 10 years older than he is. You know, my friend looks about 10 years older than he is. This mentor's wife has always struggled with health and emotional problems. My friend's wife now has begun struggling with health and emotional problems. This mentor's children, there's always been tension in their relationship with him and struggles. Now, if I was this guy, I would step back and say, you know, he might be my mentor in terms of my career and my walk with God, but in terms of my family, I might want to step back and have multiple mentors. And that's what I would encourage y'all to do, is to think, when you have a mentoring relationship where you've decided to copy some man in terms of his lifestyle, you take a hard look at his wife and his children before you make that decision. And you may want to have a ministry mentor and a career mentor, but you may want to have somebody totally different as your husband and father mentor. Good friend of mine, Charles Casebolt, who's on Navigator staff for 25 years and is now a pastor of a church in Tyler, told me one time, all of my spiritual children's heroes' first weddings were due to unplanned pregnancies. Which he suddenly sat down and figured out, all of his spiritual heroes, both in and out of the Navigators, these were men which he had tried to copy his life by, their first weddings in their family were due to unplanned pregnancies. Now, when I told Charlie, is Charlie, you know, I don't know what your application to that is, but my suggestion would be to step back and take a hard look at some of their values in terms of family and ministry, in terms of how you're deciding, you know, how to put your strokes in. It sure made me, because I personally, some of his heroes were my heroes. And I've had to periodically do some hard reevaluation in terms of how I spend my time. A good friend of mine, Chip McWilliams, is a urologist, and to maintain his board certification, they have to go to these urological schools, which are held in such academically conducive places as Vail and New Orleans, and this particular one was held in Las Vegas. To go to these classes in the meeting rooms, they had to go in and out of the large casino areas, and he said he didn't gamble, but he couldn't help, he's kind of a student of human behavior, and he said he couldn't help noticing that there was two kinds of people in casinos. One type is gambling actively. He said he noticed another kind of guy who had evidently lost all his money but would still kind of hang around and give people advice on the slot machines or, you know, how to play their chips and whatever, and kind of is really kind of a nuisance guy. And he lost all his money, and of all, who would you want to take advice from on how to gamble? But I think the guy on the bottom of my list would be some broke drunk, wouldn't you? Well, men, you have three stacks of chips in life. One stack is called your health. The next stack is called your walk with God. And the third stack is called your family. And it's been my experience that many men who've lost one or more of those stacks still very freely hang around and give advice on gambling with yours. Do not gamble with those chips, and do not allow other people to gamble with them. My first decision not to gamble with that, with my chips, was a career move I made, which put me in the doghouse with the Navigators for a number of years, and that was to step down from a supervisory position that required a lot of travel. The way I made that decision is I was in a meeting with a lot of other men who were in that same level, and we were sharing prayer requests. As one man began to talk about his wife and his children, he broke into tears and how bad things were. Then the next man, who I respect a lot, began to talk about his children. He broke into tears. Then the next man says, well, as long as we're being open. And then he began talking about his teenagers, and he began to weep. The last man had teenagers also, and he began to weep. Now, I had elementary school children, and I rocked back on my chair, and I looked at these men weeping for their children. I said, well, you know, I can make some quick decisions right here, and one is that I'm going to hand in my resignation, which I did. Well, that's what I mean, is take a good look at the men you're modeling. And don't just live a black and white life. You can love a man, but decide there are certain decisions he made that you don't want to make. And you can love a man over here and say, well, there's some decisions over here that he made that I don't want to make. And you can have multiple mentors. You know, there's a definite difference in the relationship between children and adolescents or young adults. And young adult is a term I try to use to help remind myself that my son, who's 14, is only going to be around for 4 more years, and my daughter, who's 16, is only going to be around for 2 more years. And if I ever thought about preparing them to leave, I better get with it. You know, if you meet a college freshman who doesn't know what he's going to do, you're a little worried about him. By his junior year, he doesn't know what he wants to do, you're really worried about him. Well, you meet a father who's got a 14-year-old who hasn't quite come to grips with the fact that he needs to have shifted away from being the authority figure on that child to preparing that young adult to relate to other authority periods, you worry a little bit. Well, by the junior year of high school, that father still hasn't reconciled himself to the fact that in 2 years he's going to have very little say, spiritually or otherwise, in how that child lives his life. Then you've really got a problem. Just like that college student who hadn't reconciled the fact that, you know, the end of that cliff is coming. you might want to have scoped out where the bridge is. Well, let me give you some key terms for contrast that help me and I hope will help you in making the transition from relating to your son or daughter as a child and relating to them as a young adult. One is, the Bible says, children, obey your parents in the Lord, and children need to do that. The Bible says that sons and daughters honor their parents. And at some point in those teen years, we need, as dads, to make a transition from thinking of our sons and daughters as children and begin thinking of them as sons and daughters, no longer as children. Obey versus honor. At some point during those teen years, we're going to have to make that transition between demanding obedience and demanding honor. Because there's a big difference between obedience and honor. I still honor my mother, but I don't obey her. It's been a long time since I've obeyed her. Well, at some point, as your son or your daughter moves into adulthood, when are you going to make that transition? Have you thought about that? When's obedience not going to be an issue anymore, and when's honor going to be okay? Well, unfortunately, many fathers make that a battle, which they eventually lose and reconcile themselves to, and then spend 3 or 4, maybe 5 years reestablishing the relationship. It's far better to go ahead and recognize the inevitable and promote the success of your child in that transition period, since it's going to happen anyways. It is a dysfunctional adult who still needs to obey daddy, you know, at 25. You know. So we need to help them make the transition to honor and show them that we're excited about that, that we're secure in our self-image, and we're secure in our relationship with our wife, and we don't have to have that relationship with them in a subjection type relationship to maintain peace. The Bible says that fathers are to have their children under control. That's a key term. Children are to be under control. Sons and daughters, however, the relationship with the father is a glad heart. So we have these biblical terms. You have children versus sons and daughters. You have obey versus honor. You have under control versus glad heart. Now what I'm going to do with questions, if it's all right, Holland, is go ahead and walk through this, and then anybody who doesn't have questions leaves, and then I'll stay around as long as you want. I'm giving them to you afterwards. Those are some key terms for contrast, which would be good to think about. Another is some goals for contrast. When you're thinking about your relationship with your team, training has to do with building a foundation. It's important for us to discipline and train our children. However, when we think about teenagers, we have to think about preparation for leaving. I know a lot of fathers get kind of panicky when their kids are into their teen years. A lot of their self-image was wrapped up in the job and getting going. And right about those teen years, especially if they have multiple kids, the job's under control, life is kind of under control, and they think, now I can really give my time to my kids. And so they want to gear down and start making up for lost time and start really disciplining and really starting to train these teens. But, you know, it's time now, dads, to help the teen be leaving. You know, we have to think in our minds. Now, we don't want to communicate that too strongly to a teenager, because a teenager really needs to feel like they can always be there. But in our minds, we have to know, if we have a 16-year-old, we got 2 years, and they're going to be by themselves in a dormitory somewhere across the state and need to be able to survive. So while at the same time giving them all the physical love and support and reinforcement and nurturing, we have to prepare them to make a very traumatic transition in a very short period of time. We really do. Children, we need to protect and care and hold on to. With our young adults, we need to learn to let go so that they can fend for themselves and protect themselves. And they need to learn how to do that. And, they could learn it in the school of hard knocks, but as a college minister for 17 years, I could really see the difference in the survival ability of college students, on the one hand, whose parents really were promoting the leaving and were really championing that and helping their child function as an adult and not a child, and those fathers who were still, even during the college years, trying to hold on to that control and were really threatened by it. And the former were more successful academically and spiritually than the latter. You know, there's some objectives that we need to think about. We've looked at key terms for contrast. We've talked about goals for contrast. What about some objectives for contrast? For my children, my preschooler, my elementary school-age child, for Liz, you know, one phrase we taught them, I will obey Daddy quickly the first time. And that's important. Children should obey their parents in the Lord. And I taught my children that. I know, at William Diamond Junior High, if you look at the clock when you're supposed to be paying attention to the teacher, you write this phrase: cooperation is the golden rule at William Diamond Junior High. And you fill up a yellow legal pad front and back. And that burned into my brain, no doubt, huh? As a clock watcher. Well, my kids learned, you know, it's important to obey Daddy quickly the first time. But you know, for a teen, it's not important for Becky to obey Daddy quickly the first time. It's important for Becky to think through and make a proper decision. That's what it's important for Becky to do. And starting in middle school, we began working with Becky to think through and make a proper decision after thinking about it. And I began less and less being authority and more being a coach in Becky's life. Okay. Becky showed up for church Wednesday night, and I was surprised to see her there. I was happy, but I was surprised because she had a track meet. She said, well, Daddy, you know, I had told the track coach that our youth ministry has a Bible study on Wednesday nights, and I need to be there for the Bible study. And she told me the track meet would be over by 6. And so I had to bow out of my last event because I knew I need to be here for Bible study. Well, that's not something I would have asked Becky to do. But I'm glad that I had promoted in Becky the ability to reason and think through and make a decision rather than her having to come to me and ask me, Daddy, should I stay at the track meet or should I come home? Because when she's in college or when she's on the job, you know, it's not going to be good for her to be calling me every time she has to make a decision. At some time, Becky and Sam and now Peggy need for me to step back a little and allow them, rather than to obey me quickly the first time, to think through and make a proper decision on their own. And it's good to be able to do that when I'm there. A good friend of mine, Kay Crumby, said, yeah, you know, you want to go ahead and give those teenagers, especially their juniors and senior years, the decisions to make all the mistakes they're going to make when they're in college, but then in your own home. Then you're there to help them with the pieces. He said, most parents wait, keep that authority, and then when they're not there to help them with the results, then all of a sudden there's absolute freedom. And y'all have to understand that when your child goes to college, it can do anything, he or she can do anything it wants as long as it makes the grade. Any type of substance abuse, any type of sexual promiscuity or perversion, anything. As long as they pay their bills and make their grades, they can do that enough. And it won't make any difference if you send them to Baylor or University of Texas. It's just not going to do it. Or you can send them to a small private college somewhere and things might be a little different. So you need to prepare them for that kind of freedom, you know, before you unpack the stereo and throw a rug and family pictures, and then drive down University Drive, you know, teary-eyed with Mom, leaving her at the university. Another thing that's important to do when they're little is we wanted to help them develop specific convictions and lifestyles. In other words, we really worked at controlling their environment and who their friends were, and we really worked at reinforcing over and over and over the convictions and the lifestyle that we wanted them to have when they were children. But now that they're young adults, they need to be applying convictions in the crucible of life. And we really need to give them that opportunity to do that. The context for ministry can be contrasted in the difference between our children. The context of the ministry for a child is parents, home, and those whom the parents choose to expose them. Isn't that true? Well, your two-year-old, they didn't have any friends that didn't make it through the grid of Mom and Dad, did they? Your four-year-old, your five-year-old, even Lizzie in the third grade, she doesn't have a lot of friends that I don't approve of. Well, that's going to change, though. Your teen, they need to move the context of their ministry to the church and spiritual leaders and peers, because that's where they're going to spend the rest of their life. And it may be difficult for you, Dad, to come to grips with this fact, but your daughter is going to leave your spiritual authority and may never come back. In other words, when your daughter goes to college, there's going to be a minister and a college minister of that church that she'll probably look to for her spiritual help, and when she gets married, she's going to have a husband. Now, you can fight that, and same with your son. He's going to go away to college, and you're going to want him to be involved in a church and a college ministry at that university. Then he's going to get a job, and you're going to want him to become an active member of that church and look to the spirit for his spiritual leaders from that church. So how are they going to make that transition if, while they're in high school, we don't help them? And it can be very threatening to encourage your daughter to begin looking more, or son to be looking more and more to the youth leader of the church and their Sunday school teacher and some of the older members. But it's to your advantage that they learn how to do that. That they learn that they're still your son, they're still your daughter, you still have that special relationship, they can come to you anytime they want to, but it's all right to develop spiritual authority outside the home. That way, when they go to college, they already know the ins and outs of making good decisions in that area. And it's not such a traumatic experience. And that's what we've really encouraged Becky and Sam in. Fathers and mothers, gifts and calling and application. That's what children are. You have, if you have a church party over at the home, your kids, that's their ministry. You know, they help clean up and stuff. If mom and dad go on a mission trip and take the kids, that's their ministry, right? Pretty much whatever, for children, whatever is mom's and dad's ministry and calling, that's their ministry. But you know, that's not true for teenagers. They need to begin developing their own gifts, their own calling, and their own application. You may have the gift of teaching or serving. They may have the gift of application. Of evangelism. No? And hospitality. Well, is there room in your life for a child who has a different gift than yours and a different ministry emphasis of yours? Or are you just going to say, as long as you're in this home, you're not going to develop spiritually your gifts and your calling and your ministry. You're going to have to wait till you escape from my house. And then you can find you a navigator, representative, or campus crusade director, or BSU director, or some pastor who will help you develop your own gifts and calling. Now, you don't want to do that. We want them to begin developing their own identity, their own gifts and calling, so that they'll want to become actively involved in Christian fellowship when they go to college. It's always amazing to me to find parents who smother and suppress ministry activities by their children and exalt academic pursuits. Sure, skip church, you know, on Wednesday night you've really got a big test. And sure, I know, you know, there's an out-of-town ball game and, you know, you don't have to fool with church. And, you know, no, we're not going to drive for this activity or that activity, but sure, we'll haul the football team around. And, you know, and no, you can't go with the youth after church for pizza. It's a school night. I want you home studying. Yeah? And they suppress church and ministry involvement and exalt academic pursuits. And then they can't understand when their children go to college why they pursue academics and are indifferent towards church. Do you think it could be that's because they were raised? So we really need to think about that, guys. You know, I know in the flesh, you know, I can be the chief offender in that. I know in my mind it would be, or in my heart, I guess, if Becky graduated from high school with all C's, married some plumber, lived in a very low-class house in Houston. She worked as a hairdresser, and he got jobs as he could as a plumber. But they both love the Lord. They're both active in their church, and he's a deacon, and they just serve the Lord and have a good marriage. I know that would be best for her. But you know, when I start pushing Becky, what I think is, man, it's all going to depend on her grades. And you know, and how many of us would choose that? You know, no, we want Becky. Becky's going to be a lawyer and she's going to marry a doctor and they're going to live in a, you know, $150,000 home and they're going to have advanced education. Who cares about the fact that they don't go to church and their kids are wild and their marriage is unhappy? I life isn't black and white like that. But men have, you know, we really need to keep this academic business in perspective. And you're not behind the game if academics are slipping a little because your son or your daughter is active in their church youth program. And you want to be careful about what you slam the door on and what you teach in terms of priorities. So when we discipline our teenagers, if they're grounded, they're never grounded from church and youth activities. Lights out unless they're reading their Bible. They can stay up as late as they want reading their Bible. You need the car? Well, no, you can't have the car. But if you're driving for a youth activity, sure you can have the car. That's money in the bank. Okay? No, there's no money for records and tapes and books. Unless, of course, you go in the Christian bookstore. Well, yeah, we can always come up with a little money for that. See, that stuff you want to feed and you want to promote while you can. That's money in the bank. Well, there's some questions I can ask myself to see if I'm making these transitions. So let me ask you all. Y'all got a handout there that I'm going to get you to take a test on, but don't look at it now. Just kind of reflect rhetorically on these questions. Do I think of my adolescent as a child or as a son or daughter? In other words, I have to make sure I view Becky, who's 16, as different from Liz, who's 8, in how I view them. Am I satisfied with honor or do I need obedience? when Becky comes home from school and we begin talking about politics, you know, she was kind of hot on Clinton. Well, do I demand obedience because good Christians are all Republicans? Or as long as she's respectful in her conversation, and the conversation is stimulating, and she's showing me honor, is that enough? Or does she have to think like me? How about homosexuals? Well, Becky said, you know, Dan, I think it's wrong the way Christians hate homosexuals. What do you mean the Bible says that they're all Christians? You know? She said, you know, their lifestyle isn't good, but I think it's wrong to be prejudiced against them, because then how are you ever going to witness to them? I think you should treat them just like anybody, any other non-Christian. All non-Christians go to hell, and then maybe we'd lead some of them to the Lord. Well, is that okay? Or does she have to conform to the way I feel? You know? What do you think of that? She has more spiritual attitude towards them than me, by the way. Right? How about the church she chooses? What if your child says that she doesn't want to go to your church, but she wants to go to another church? Now, what's most important for you? That your daughter or son get in the habit of isolating the type of church that ministers to them best and then pursues that? Huh? When they go to college, are they going to go to your church? When is it all right to go to your church? Well, if they're going to have to pick a church when they go to college, maybe it'd be a good idea to help them learn how to pick a good church. Have you ever thought of that? Who's going to teach them how to pick a good church? You think their philosophy professor at University of Texas is? You think the head resident at University of Arkansas is going to teach them how to pick a good church? Think their roommate at Texas A&M is going to teach them how? How about you? Are you going to drive up from your home to U of A or to Tech or SMU every Sunday and teach them how to pick a good church? Well, maybe their senior year, you ought to cut them free from your church and let them learn how to pick a good church. Or do they have to? When you're in my house, you'll go to church with me. And when you're not in my house, you won't go to church, see? But I won't know about it. Just don't let me know. What about scripture memory? I really like scripture memory. You know, there are deacons and pastors and evangelists who don't memorize scripture. Did you know that? And they're used by God. My daughter stays awake sometimes 11 or 12 at night reading her Bible. She works at scripture memory, but she doesn't really like it. Well, you know, as long as she's pursuing the Lord, I'll let the Holy Spirit work out some of these details. I'm not going to make a girl who stay up to 11 o'clock reading her Bible and then puts verses on the wall, and I look at them and I say, you know, I've got that verse on my office wall. You know, I'm not going to make her feel bad because she's not doing something at 16 that I didn't do till I was 21, you know? I'll give her 5 years of slack in there. Does their questioning of my beliefs, convictions, and philosophies seem stimulating? Or do I feel threatened and need to demand conformity? Do their mistakes seem positive? Or do I still need to protect and nurture them? Now, there's some mistakes I protect Becky from. When Becky was in fifth grade, in Houston Independent School District, your math grade determines, and your science grade determines what middle school you go to. She had two middle schools, and one's a real rough one, and one's a real good one. Well, we really put the screws to her for her math and science grade, her fifth grade year. We really worked hard with her because we wanted her in a safe middle school. Well, that's one thing. You know, and she had a friend whose dad said, well, I'm going to let you make the decision. That girl ended up in a real bad situation and is really suffering emotionally now. Now, that's one thing. You know, when you see it's a really a major decision, you might want to step in because of the long-term ramification, which your young teenager just doesn't really realize the long-term ramifications of. But in an overall system of decision-making, we've got to more and more allow them to make mistakes and give them the freedom to make mistakes and suffer the consequences so that they can kind of ease into it rather than just being black and white. Am I taking positive steps to prepare them to leave me, Or am I holding on to every bit of authority as I can? Now, we have some things that we do with our kids as they get into middle school. You know, and they're little things, but they promote the feeling in our children that they are becoming adults. One thing is, when they finish the eighth grade, they can drink coffee. Now, that, you know, when are you going to let your child drink coffee, is it? You know? Well, you know, Peggy and Liz and Sam can't drink coffee, but Becky can. You know, we sit down at the table and everybody pours a cup of coffee and Becky drinks coffee with the adults. Well, you see, that promotes in Becky a sense as I'm moving into adulthood. This year, Sam's in the eighth grade. He's been begging for coffee. Now, listen, the same thing's going to happen to Sam as Becky. Last day of school, eighth grade, first day of summer, he's going to have a big cup of coffee. He's not going to like it. He's going to be indifferent towards it. But nevertheless, he can have it. You know, and then they develop, every once in a while they take some, they develop a taste for it, and pretty soon, after dinner's over, all the kids go and play, and Mom and Dad and Grandma, the guests, sit around and have a cup of coffee, and Becca will stay and have a cup of coffee and drink and talk adult talk. And that's a good transition activity. Another thing is the car. You know, we've got, boy, you know, when I took Becky out, we learned how to drive, and then I've really promoted. And no, Mom was, you know, she just knew she would never see her daughter again first time Becky took off with the car. But we live in Houston. I got Becky up on the freeways, and Becky, you know, I have Becky. You know, when Liz wants to spend night with Grandma, you have to drive about 20 minutes on the freeway to get to Grandma's house. And, you know, I make sure Becky drives Liz down to spend night with Grandma. And that gives Becky a feeling of being in control of her life, and that she's an adult and she's responsible. And we taught her how to, you know, fill it up with gas and how to use a credit card, how to act responsibly. Well, when are they going to learn these things? We have students at Oklahoma State University who were afraid to drive to Oklahoma City because their parents never let them drive on the freeway. Well, their parents never let them drive outside of town. Well, what are some things that you are doing to prepare them for authority? I know with Sam, I like to coach Sam's baseball team, but I knew when Sam got to be about fourth grade, it was better for me not to coach his baseball team. It's better for Sam to have a coach and to be his own man and be out there, you know, and knocking the dirt off his cleats, and having a coach looking him at his face and talking to him and Sam talking back. You know, and to, you know, because a coach, those coaches with those young men, they develop almost a peer relationship with them, and that's good. But you know, Sam would have never developed that type of self-confidence if his dad was always the coach. He would always be the son. He would never really be the shortstop. Never really be the catcher. So Eleanor and I have thought through with our kids. These are just a few of the things which we do as they enter middle school and high school that promote a feeling of adulthood in their lives. You know, responsibility and things that we give them to help them make them feel like an adult and they're responsible. Am I preparing them to be able to choose God's will over my will, or do I equate the two? Do you equate your will with God's will? Well, I've got some tough news for you. There is one God and one mediator, the man Christ Jesus. It is not the Father. And, you know, I know a lot of people like that illustration. Here's the child, you know, and here's the spike, and that's the mother, and the hammer is the father, you know, God, and or the spike is the father, and the hammer is God. That spike is Jesus Christ. That Jesus Christ is the only mediator. There is one God and one mediator between man and God, the man Christ Jesus. And you are not a mediator between your child and God. And believe it or not, you will make mistakes. And I have to give Becky the freedom to respond to the Holy Spirit. And so if I, you know, there's some things we may disagree on that I may let her go ahead and do because I feel like, well, you know, she really feels like this is something the Lord wants her to do. She had an opportunity to go up to Eagle Lake for 6 weeks to be an associate camp director. Well, I didn't want my sophomore daughter last summer away from home for 6 weeks, but she had really prayed about it, really felt like that's what God wanted her to do. Well, I, you know, if she came to me and said, "Daddy, I think the Lord wants me to go minister somewhere," You know, it does two things. It helps, gives her a halfway experience of living away from home in a no-lose environment, and it also gives her a chance to pray through and see if she really has figured out God's will. Do I look forward to my children and I living separate lives? Or am I threatened by this and seeking to delay it? Now think, you know, as your teenagers are chugging along, are you throwing wrenches into the works every chance you get? Or, you know, are you excited about your teenagers growing up and leaving home? I think Becca and the freedom she has with her car. There's a Filipino family in our church that just kills them that their teenager's growing up. He's 2 years older from Becky and didn't even have his driver's license. When Becky got her driver's license, he went home and shamed his father into letting him get his. Becca went away for camp for 6 weeks. Becca has a friend at church whose parents, they just died when she went to camp for 1 week. They just couldn't bear to have their child be away from home. You know, Sam plays baseball and I just sit in the stands and sit on my hands and behave myself. One of Sam's girls in Sam's youth group is a great softball player, and her dad just hovers over her. He has to be the coach. She has to be there. She has to practice with him. He's just so afraid she's going to grow up and leave home. Becca, you know, we've told Becca, you know, you can go to a private school if you got a scholarship. You know, you pick out the public school, and we'll pay for it. Her Filipino friend heard parents say, no, you're going to live in the home and go to University of Houston. Well, you know, do I look forward to my children living separate lives and am I preparing them for it? Or am I dreading it and trying to delay it? We really need to look in the mirror and ask ourselves that. You say, well, my son's so irresponsible, you can't give him any freedom. Well, I'm sorry. The clock is moving. My daughter turned 16 last September and didn't ask my permission. Nobody checked in with me. You know, I just all of a sudden, there was September 26, 1992, when she was 16. This coming September, without checking in, without asking my permission, you know, without filling out any forms, she's going to be 17. You know, and then she's going to be in college. I mean, is this going to happen? So, it's too late to train them as a child. We just got to help them be successful young adults in whatever way we can. Try to keep them from ruining their lives and at the same time try to maintain a relationship with them so that they always feel like they can walk up and ask us our opinion or ask us for help. You know, I've noticed a lot of correlations with teens and toddlers. I've noticed that my teenagers like routines just like my toddlers did. My teenagers like us to have a sit-down meal even if they're not always there. But they want to know it's there. You know, Becky may be at Yo Night, which is our youth night on Wednesday night, and she may be at a lock-in on Friday night, and she may be at a track meet on Tuesday night, but she likes to know that the family is having a sit-down meal, and she likes to be there as often as she can. There's so much chaos in a teenager's life that routines are important. Notice when Becky was young, I used to come in and check on her and kiss her goodnight. Then there was a period when she didn't like that, but now she's in high school. She likes me to stick my head in, tell her I love her, goodnight, honey, maybe come in and give her a little kiss. So with my teenage son. That's become important to him again, that routine. Some stability, some routine. The solid figure of dad loving mom and the home together. To come home to in the chaos of that public school experience and the chaos in the social world, the secular world, is very important. Toddlers need constant positive reinforcement. And I've known my teens need constant. Sam needs to be told he's handsome, he's smart, and I'm proud of him. Becky needs to be told she's pretty, she's smart, and I'm frustrated that wants to convince them they're not very bright. There's not much they can be proud of, and they're certainly not attractive, but if they will spend thousands of dollars during their teen years, they can be that way. You see, we have to overcome that. Our teens need every day to hear, you're so attractive, Oh, you say that because, well, you know, your mother's attractive and I married her and you hear, and you look just like your mother. You're so attractive. Oh, you think so, Daddy? Oh, you, and I'm so proud of you. Oh, really, Daddy? You really? Oh, yes. And you're just so smart. Becky, you're a lot smarter than I was when I was your age. Oh, was I really, Daddy? Yeah, you are. You make a lot better grades. I'm just so proud. No, they need to hear that. They need to hear that constantly. Yeah. You'll say that 20 times. Then they'll do something. They'll say, "Oh, you never compliment me when I do something good." You know that. Well, that just shows you how much bombardment they're being getting from their peers and from the advertising media. Well, here's some questions I can ask myself to see how things are going. In fact, let me give you a quote from James Dobson's Hide or Seek. That's a good book, by the way. James Dobson's written a book, Hide or Seek, which I feel is a very good book for middle school and teenage parents. I have observed that the process of letting go during late adolescence is much more difficult for parents with deep religious convictions than for those without them. Christian families are more likely to be aware of and concerned by the spiritual dangers their children will face with increasing independence and freedom. They have greater reason to fear the consequences of premarital intercourse, marriage to a non-believer, rejection of the Christian ethic, and other departures from the faith that they have been taught. Everything they have said during the first 18 years will either be incorporated into the values of the new adult, or it will be rejected and thrown overboard. The importance of these decisions, then, causes too many zealous parents to hold on tightly to their maturing child. They insist that he do what is right, demanding his obedience and loyalty. They allow him to make few important decisions and try to force feed certain attitudes to him. But the day for that kind of programming is past. The result is often tremendous resentment on the adolescent's part, leading him to defy them just to prove his independence. I think that there's a lot of truth in that. So we need to let go, learn how to let go in some areas, and I'd like to give you four areas that you might want to reflect on when you think of transitioning. Now, you're just not going to let go, because that's what I'm saying don't do, because you're going to have to do it. Does that make sense? The college years, most parents just let go. You know, it goes from this to that. Then the child comes home for the first weekend, and it's back to this. Then they notice the child didn't come home again until Christmas. Well, here's some things that we want to begin to let go of. Gifts. It's important to let go of gifts. What is your child gifted at? Well, begin to let go of that, both spiritual and natural gifts, so that they develop their own. Their calling. I was in a staff meeting one time with a navigator staff who was almost in tears because his son was involved actively in the BSU and not in the navigators. But I've got news for you. There's a lot of people who would fast and pray that their kids would lead Bible study and they wouldn't care where it was. I mean, it's going to be all right, you know. Lead Bible studies in the BSU, you're going to do okay. Calling, you know. There's a lot of people who say, well, you're an engineer, I guess your son will be an engineer. No. Well, you play softball in the Parks and Rec, your son plays softball. Oh, no. Well, I see you like to read murder mysteries. Your son likes to read murder. No. But he will be a deacon in the church, or he will be a Baptist, or he will be a navigator. Well, you know, it's all the same deal, you know. As long as your son is actively pursuing the Lord, he may not choose your calling because he doesn't have your gifts. How about letting go of convictions where the godly differ? You know, a lot of godly people differ on election. Did you know that? Limited, unlimited atonement. A lot on creationism. You know, there are a lot of godly people who differ on creationism. Old world philosophy, new world philosophy, catastrophic philosophy, long age, short age. Well, no, it doesn't bother me that Becky differs from me on creationism. She still believes that God created it. She believes in the long day theory. I believe in a created age. In other words, things were created old. But that doesn't bother me. In fact, I would never argue with Becky on that point. In fact, I encourage her and praise her for thinking through and coming to her decision on it. Okay? So, there's a lot of places where godly people differ in the Christian life, and we just give our kids slack. I mean, do you sit up at night worrying whether John Crawford believes in limited or unlimited atonement? But I know a lot of people who allow best friends to differ on issues that won't give their son an inch of slack. Who can live with a lot more with their friends than they can with their own children. And that's wrong. Our young adults need to become our friends, and we need to begin to give them the same slack that we give our other friends. And then social mores and traditions. Have to think through on some of those things. Just because they may not choose. What if your son one day announced, when I have my family, we're going to do it this way. Yeah, well, great. I'm so encouraged that you're thinking of traditional family values. You're thinking about what you're going to do, and you want to do it a little different. That's great. Or does it threaten you? Oh, well, you think I did it wrong? I've been a failure. Yeah, no, we won't have a Christmas tree. Or with most navigators, we will have a Christmas tree. Well, does that? No, that's all right. Things that are just social values, they may do things differently than you. Yeah. In the college ministry, I met parents who wouldn't let go. I had a parent call me one time. He's a fine Christian missionary. He was concerned that his daughter was telling him that she was involved in Christian activities with our ministry, and that she wasn't really doing those things. So he said, what I want you to do, John, is I want you to keep a journal of everything Susie Q is doing, and I'm going to call you on Fridays, and I want you to report it in, and then I will compare it with what she tells me she's doing. And I'll use the name Joe. Joe, I'm sorry, I just couldn't do that. Well, he hit the ceiling. You've got to do that. I've got to know what she's doing. Well, no surprise to any of us that Susie Q not only wasn't involved in my ministry, but was dating non-Christian internationals and was rebelling against that oppressive authority just as fast as she could. When I think of, by contrast, a gentleman in our church, son, his senior year, said, Dad, I think I'd like to go over to West University Baptist Church. They have a bigger youth group over there, and the music style in their worship service is a lot more contemporary. And we've got two cars. You and Mom and Sis could go over to Rice Baptist, which is a little more traditional, and I could go to university. Leonard made a very smart move. He said, well, that's fine, son. You just do that. And he did. He finished out his high school career over at West U, and he was able to find a church and select it for good reasons. And so it's no surprise to me that now that he's down at Louisiana in college, he's plugged into a church just like, he did in Houston. But his dad promoted that independence and that decision-making. I think his dad made a good decision. He really did. Yeah. Well, help your teen develop spiritual leaders and identity outside the home. And a dynamic youth program is really important. Eleanor, once our kids were in the second grade, we stopped joining churches on the basis of the worship service and began joining churches on the basis of the education program and the youth program. I'm going to make it through a boring service. And the guy may not be doctrinally on target, but that doesn't bother me if my kids are doing well. And so that's how we made a decision. And when you do that, you've got to see through the fog of love. When your child comes to you and says, oh, they're too cliquish. Or, I don't like the youth pastor. It's no fun. Well, I just want to remind you all of something that I've observed as a university minister. If you think your teen is critical of the youth program that they've been involved in just a few short years, just think what they have to say about you with all the years you've been together. And that's just true. I guarantee you, if your teen rags the youth minister, You ought to hear what he tells the youth minister about you. Some teens are just like that. And he's got a lot more ammo on you than he does any youth minister that he just sees a couple times a week. So, you know, hang in there with this deal. You know, find out, are those concerns legitimate? Or is he struggling with spiritual issues and just knows that he can play on your sensitivity? I would really promote active involvement in a good, strong youth program, and to have one if it means changing from a what you would call a Bible preaching church to one that's not necessarily a Bible preaching church but has a dynamic family program. That's what I would opt for. Because when your kids are gone, you can always go back to the Bible preaching church. Okay? You really can. You really can. With that, I tend to ignore the highs and lows. When Becky comes to me and says, "Dad, I'm going to be a missionary in India," I go, "Wow, that's wonderful, dear. That's right." And then when she comes back the next day and says, "You know, I've been thinking, I'm not sure it does any good to pray, because when you pray and you don't get it, you say it's not God's will, and you pray when you do get it, it is God's will, so it just doesn't seem any different." I said, "Well, sweetheart, I'm really happy you're thinking through on that stuff. And, you know, do you want to talk about it?" She says, no, I just thought, I was just thinking out loud. Okay? So I kind of ignore those things, you know? And you know, a lot of young men and women, I would live under the burden of their parents nailing to the wall a decision they made in a moment of emotion at a revival or a youth camp. I had a businessman, he's a millionaire, sitting in my office, head shaking his head. He said, "John, you know, one of the reasons I think one of the things, some of the problems I've had is that, you know, when I was in seventh grade, I surrendered to preach and just never followed through on it, you know, and I can remember my uncle and some people in the church kept reminding me of that decision." Well, I'm not sure what I think about this surrender to preach anyways, but you sure don't want to take a kid who's in the seventh grade and label him for life because he didn't follow through on his surrender to preach. I mean, those guys, they stand up there, and there's a lot of adrenaline flowing at the end of those services. I'm not saying somebody can't surrender to preach when they're 7 years old. But there's also kids who may go down there, and what they're really surrendering to is a lifetime of service to God. And in their mind, the way you're most committed to God is by preaching. And then they find out they don't have gifts and calling to do it successfully. So they do something else and always live under guilt that they didn't do that. So, you know, if your child has said they want to be a minister, say, I think that's great, and I'll support you in every way. But don't tack that thing up over the family altar. You know, and you're going to change your major from religion to business, you know, and then rip that thing down. What am I going to say at the deacon meeting Tuesday night? You know? Let me know whose ego is really at stake on these deals. I have a good friend of mine who was in a car accident when he was about 8 years old, and they thought he was going to die, and they had a big church prayer meeting, and they went in, prayed for him in the hospital, and he didn't die. And then they said, well, he was going to be mentally retarded, and he wasn't retarded. And boy, every time you're around his mother, I know God is going to use Billy Joe in a special way. Because we prayed, and I just told God, take him, use him any way you want to, if you'll just, and God healed him, and I just know Billy Joe is going to be used by God. I don't know if he's going to be a preacher or a missionary, but, you know, and poor Billy Joe is called by God to manage El Chico in the Southwest, and he's got a fine Christian wife and fine Christian family, and he's a Sunday school teacher in the church and just a fine Christian man. But when he goes back to his hometown, "Oh, Billy Joe, you know, we just knew God was going to use you in a special way. We're just waiting for you to conform," you know? Don't do that. Don't do that. Let God call them as adults. Well, anyways, I won't beat that to death. I just saw that guy recently, and I was hurting for him, so that's why I went on that. Okay? Be a blessing, not a pain in the neck, to those who are ministering to your young adult. You know, don't get on the phone after every Wednesday night. "What? You did what?" You know? And a lot of it's social mores. Like at our church, I suggested as an outreach activity, we have a square dance. Well, the church board got very solemn. "No, we don't dance." But you know, in our church, in the family area of our church, we have this family deal. There's a pool table right in the middle of it. And I said, you know, a lot of churches will have square dances that wouldn't have a pool table, you know, in their family discipleship ministry. So some of these things are just kind of, we never did it that way when I was young, you know. Well, that's right. You're not young, and they're doing it different. So that pretty much sums it up. So give him a little slack, unless he's preaching false doctrine. You know, give him a little slack. Be his hero. I mean, he's going to be the key to your team wanting to go to church and being actively involved in Christian pursuits. So it doesn't help to have a critical tongue at the dining room table about the guy. You know, you rag on him for 15 minutes, and then you say, oh, by the way, honey, will you be going to the lock-in? No, I don't think so. I'm with you. So, and beware of jealousy. I know when Becky started to look to Skip Wallace for spiritual leadership, there was some real jealousy I had to deal with. But I knew it was best. I knew it was best. Okay? And don't critique and contradict your youth leader's teaching. You know, the youth leader gives a presentation, and don't on the way home say, well, you know, he really got that Bible verse right, wrong. And of course, you know, that was the right thought, but it was out of context. And when he has teenagers, he'll know better. You know, don't do that in front of your kids, too. I had at the university, Oklahoma State University, two children of a very prominent minister known worldwide. Now, I was trying to help these two kids in evangelism, and they were excited about evangelism. This particular minister, though, is a very strong Calvinist. Every time they would go home, he would criticize and criticize the aggressive type of evangelism we were doing. And pretty soon, his kids just stopped. They just weren't interested in evangelism anymore. Well, he got to beat his doctrinal drum and got to maintain his authority over his kids in that area, but I'm not sure he came out the winner in the short run or the long run. I think he would have been a lot better off to let his children, that's an area where godly men differ, to let his children work through what the balance is between election and aggressive evangelism and kind of let them work that through. So, when I think of Dick and Mary Jo Nutter down in Conroe, you know, it can go the other way. Dick and Mary Jo were kind of nominally involved in their church down in Conroe, and their son Blake decided he wanted to be a short-term missionary. And boy, they got really excited about that. Oh, so that's what God's doing in your life. Well, they wanted to be a support for him, so they joined the mission board of their church. Began promoting missions. They took off spiritually growing and, you know, sent Blake off to the mission field. Well, that's kind of the way to do it. When your teen comes home and he's on a spiritual track, rather than instructing them in the way more perfect, live, you know, with some ragged edges and just be glad he's on a spiritual track and try to promote that deal. Charlie Casebolt in that church up in Tyler, the quotable Charles here, he once said to me, the Christians in our church want to send only the sons and daughters of pagans to the mission field while keeping their own here to enjoy. He said, the reason a lot of Christian families want to have these college ministries in the church is we could lead these pagan kids to the Lord and then send them off to the mission field. But don't send our kids. You know, we'll keep them home. Some pagan, dumb pagan, he doesn't need a daughter home for Christmas. Let's send her to Kenya. I'm a Christian. My daughter should be home for Christmas. So we need to be careful, you know. And right, your son wants to go to Kenya. Well, you know, there's a lot of parents who wake up every morning, the first thing they pray is, Lord, help him move out of her house, help him go back to school, and help him get off the bottle. And here you're, oh, my son, he reads the Bible every day and he witnesses, and now he wants to go to the mission field. Not sure God is really hearing the moans of those pleas. Well, another thing I'd like for you to consider that I struggle with is don't use a double legalistic standard. If you listen to rock and roll and country and western music or other types of secular music when you're driving around, you know, downtown and stuff like that, if the radio dial is not permanently set on the Christian station, you know, don't decide that you can do that, but if your child listens to any of that, you know, that they're going to lose their salvation. You know, I promote Christian music for Becky, and I know it's best. But I know some, I listen to secular music some, and I know it's going to be all right for her to do that. And sometimes I want to tell parents of teenagers, you know, you can loosen up just a little. I mean, it's almost borderline hypocritical to forbid your teenager to listen to secular music when you do it all the time at work and on the road. You know, there's a little something, there's something missing there. Don't hold your teen to a different standard for a young Christian than you do for the ones you're ministering to. I know that I have this problem. I'll be ministering to a young Christian and the guy will fall and I'll say, it's all right, we can get back on your feet, and they'll sin. And I'll say, oh, you're just a young Christian, it's all right, you know. But then we don't have that same type of merciful attitude towards our own children as an encourager, you know. Oh, no, they've sinned, you know. And I noticed that when I volunteer for tutoring over my daughter's school on my day off, and I noticed that when I'm helping these kids I'm tutoring in math, I'm a real encourager. But I noticed when I'm helping my own daughter in math, I'm critical. And I was telling Eleanor last night, I said, honey, night before last, I wish it was last night, it was night before last, you've got to really pray for me because I've really been convicted. I need to treat Peggy just as nice as I do her friends. Yeah, but, you know, we kind of get in these ruts, don't we? We really do. Don't fall into the double standard of accepting adults into your ministry or fellowship who have committed all sorts of terrible sins in their youth and yet are now walking with God, and then write off your own kids for the same or lesser offenses. Yeah? Yeah? I know I have a friend who's in the ministry who has people, you know, and they were wild and woolly when they were young. But he's got them back going for the Lord, and they're doing all right. He just loves it for them to stand up and tell their wild and woolly testimonies. But then when his own kids do something wild and woolly, he loses all hope. Now, that's a real double standard. Don't defend the things to your children that upset you just as much and you complain about just as much. I know we were attending this church where the pastor was just boring. And Eleanor would complain sometimes that she was really bored. But when Becky would complain that the sermons were boring, Eleanor would say, you can't talk about the pastor like that. You should just appreciate it. Well, the sermons were boring. It was all right for Eleanor to talk about boring sermons. Why was it all right for Becky to express that and kind of come to a decision on what was boring and what was enjoyable? And a lot of things that we don't like, we somehow expect our children to like because it's a spiritual thing to do. It's better just to be real with them. Your friends don't have to agree with you to be your friends, but do your kids have to agree with you to be your friends? Let me ask y'all something here. How many of y'all snuck a cigarette during your teen years? Okay. My hand was up too. How many of you ever had a beer or drink? How many of you got loaded? Yeah, me too. Okay. How many of you maybe took a look at a Playboy or something? You know, Okay, have you thought through? You know? Have you thought through what you're going to do when your kids do those things? You know, look, it's actually possible to do all those things and still be at a Navigator men's conference attending a workshop on how to be a good father, isn't it? Oh, just look at yourselves. All right? So you know, we can loosen up a little, and what we want to be is the fan of that child, and we want to be committed to them. We want to create quality memories which can be relied upon in times of stress and temptation. You want to have dates with your daughters where you take them out on a date. When's the last time you took your daughter out on a date? Well, you want to have your daughter when remember that, boy, you know, I got to, but you know, Daddy. And what'd you do this Valentine's Day? No, I snuck away from the office and went over to high school and delivered my daughter a rose. You know, with a little baby's breath, a little, oh, Daddy, oh, I wish you could stay. I'd just like to take you around, show you to all my people. Oh, this is so nice. Did you do that? All my daughters got roses. My son got a big old huge chocolate eclair. What do you give a boy for Valentine's Day? He was happy with that. Yeah, cash. Uh-huh. Do you ever take vacations with your kids? Sam and I go on a baseball safari every year. We load up the car and we drive up to Dallas and spend the night in the motel and take in a Rangers game. Then we drive maybe up to Kansas City and then back. And just time in the car and time on the ball field. One thing your child should remember is that you were the key to their being successful in the things that were important to them. During their teen years, if baseball was important to them, you were in there helping them be successful. If they liked drama, you helped them be successful at that. They had trouble with algebra and you couldn't do it, well, you hired a tutor, you know. You were in there with them, and that you were important in their being successful. You were their coach and their fan, and just when they did well, it was just so important to you. A lot of dads, when their daughters get into the teen years, stop hugging them and stop kissing them, and you know, don't make that mistake. That daughter needs that physical affection and that warmth. You know, they really do. You know, Sam, this is my jacket, you know? Sam and I were out shopping for a jacket, and he said, Dad, wouldn't it be neat if we both had the same jacket? Well, I tell you, you know, I bought his jacket. Anytime you got a teenage son who says, wouldn't it be neat if you had the same jacket I did, you do that. I mean, you just don't worry about styles and stuff like that. You did that. Sam still calls me his buddy. And we have little pet names, like Sam and I are Buddy, Becky is Becky Boo, and Liz is Lizzie Combs, and Peggy's Peggy Poo, and we like to hug and talk and be affectionate. And boy, stay away from rough play, especially with your sons that's already competitive. You know, when Sam was littler, we would stop basketball or baseball when he was either tired or sore. We would just stop. Well, now, it's when I'm tired and sore. It really is. And I'm so glad that when we were young, I didn't have a competitive relationship with him in basketball. It wasn't I always had to win, and to make him better, he could never beat me at horse, or he could never out-throw me or out-hit, you know. We never did that. It was play. It was me and my bud. Buddies, you know, buddies who just do things together. And when I'm out playing, you know, Brent Phillips, my good friend, I don't play burn ball with him and knock him off the court and make him all... No, it's not like that. It's just friends. And that's what you need to do with your son. He needs to be your friend. Your daughters need to be your friends. And stay away from demeaning names like Monkey Face and Pumpkin Head and stuff like that. I hear daughters and they say, come on over here, Monkey Face. I just, you know, they need sweetheart, darling, sugar. Boy, you're so pretty. That's what they need to hear. They need to hear. Well, in closing, you can't spank them anymore. You really can't. A friend of mine, son, was rebellious, and I remember him saying, you know, I've made a mistake. I've been listening to all these people say you can't spank your kids, and you can too. You need a good wearing out, son. You go in your room. So he went around looking for a slat, you know, to give his son a spanking. His son stayed going to his room while his dad was out back looking for a slat, walked out the front door, got in his car, and drove off. Didn't see him again for 3 weeks. Now, let me ask you something. Some grown man came up to you and said, I'm going to go after you with a stick. What would you do? I'd go get in my car and drive off. That's what I'd do. See, and you've got to remember, these are young men, young women, and they've got to be convinced that what you're doing is seeking to make them successful. And they'll give you a lot of slack if they are convinced that you are making personal and career sacrifices to make them successful, and they know you're doing that. That same guy, his son came home drunk. So he took him... Have I told you all this? His son came home drunk, so he took him down to the hospital and got his stomach pumped out. That'll teach him. Now, if you were that kid, what would you do? I wouldn't come home drunk again, sure. Every time I got drunk, I'd go over to my friend's house. Which is that, you know? I mean, we can be the tough dad, you know? You know, a lot of that stuff sounds good in war stories, but, you know, I mean... on movies, but it really doesn't play good in real life, you know, because if my son gets drunk, I want him home. I want him home. And I want to help him through it. And I want him to be his buddy, and I want him to know he can come in and throw up in my toilet, and then come put his head in my lap and work it out. That's what I want. That's what we got to do. So you guys, when you think of discipline for these teenagers, think of things they hate, and then have them do it. But the days of physical discipline are over. They really are. Well, I've I have some more stuff, but time's up, so why don't we just stand and close in prayer, and we'll just trust the rest of this information to the Lord.